This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, okay, hold on, I got a new favorite food.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie Mayo.
Yeah, it's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it at the grocery store.
And this mayo is different.
Mm-hmm. Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything. Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, one in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show right now on the Press Box as we continue to roll on and roll through what is a very busy Monday. So, we got a lot out of the way already in the first hour, and there's a lot more to get to. I want Nick to really get into this because he's our resident UFC expert. I did catch some of this, but boy, there was a lot to come out of the fights this weekend in a lot of different areas. And then, of course, Conor McGregor, who didn't even fight, had to get right back in and chime in and stir it up and try and make himself relevant.
Well, he did say no more Mr. Nice Guy, so I guess he's going to stick to that. So you're going to see a lot more of the vocal Conor McGregor that we've seen in the past, I would imagine, because after that last fight with Dustin Poirier, no more Mr. Nice Guy. I would imagine that his goal is to get both of those belts again, 170, 155. That remains to be seen. And obviously, he'll have to get through Dustin Poirier in the trilogy before he can do that. But UFC 261 did indeed happen on Saturday. It was on pay-per-view. It was the first card at 100% capacity since the pandemic. A little over 16,000 people attended, a $3.3 million gate, so an unbelievable success story. Bunch of finishes on the fight card, 13 bouts in total, and a great, great main card that I felt like you missed if you did not get to see it. I guess we can start with Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
He finishes Jorge Masvidal. And boy, did he. I feel like everybody has known Masvidal now over the past year or two. He's really made a name for himself, despite being in the MMA world for quite some time, known as a street fighter, knew Kimbo Slice, was a part of that whole YouTube fighting realm, just an absolute tough guy. But I did say I like Masvidal. I wanted him to win. I just thought Usman was too much, and it proved too much. I mean, he kept finding a home for that straight left hand. And Masvidal, because the guy's had over 50 fights and he basically never gets finished, maybe he just didn't give credit to the fighting power and he kept on saying, bring it. And you just can't do that. But if you look at that punch, I really believe a human that's 1,000 pounds would have been knocked out by that punch. I don't think anybody with a good chin would have held up with that punch. So Kamaru Usman makes a name for himself. Is itching closer to be one of the best 170-pounders ever. Not pound for pound yet. He's itching his way. He's got 14 consecutive wins. He still needs some more title defenses at 170 if you're going to ask me to put him above the likes of like a George St. Pierre, because that guy was just absolutely dominant. And then obviously...
Well, by the way, before you get off of that, there was one guy that was more offended by the loss than most, and that would be Chad Ochocinco. Did you see the video, too?
Yes, yes.
Of him watching him get knocked out and just drop the massive F-bomb because he put $50,000 on him to win?
Yeah, and he was like, I need you to look me in the eye. We played the audio last week. He went up to Jorge Masvidal in the pre-fight, and he was like, look me in the eye. Tell me, man, you're the underdog. Should I bet it? Look, if you listened to the press box, Ochocinco, you wouldn't have lost $50,000, sir. Jorge Masvidal has been around for so long. But sometimes you can be a guy that's practiced and trained for so much, and then you have another guy that's trained for a fraction of the years that you've trained, and they're just naturally better. They just naturally become better. And Kamaru Usman is a natural athlete. That guy just knows how to fight. Again, not pound for pound yet. Still needs to make a name for himself if he wants to be considered the greatest 170er of all time. But the guy is just, he's shown he's a natural talent. I don't understand the boos, but apparently people think he's boring. Now the disgusting fight.
Oh.
Chris Weidman.
Mm.
God, it was an unfortunate situation. Goes up against Uriah Hall, a very fierce fighter, a guy that his record is, he's way better than what his record indicates. Will absolutely put you to sleep. A lot of people make the argument that he has one of the best KOs of all time in The Ultimate Fighter when he hit that kid with a spinning back kick, I believe, and just absolutely ruined that kid's jaw. But Chris Weidman goes up against Uriah Hall, who he beat before either one of them were in the UFC, mind you. So this was actually a rematch from a fight in a regional bout. Goes for a leg kick. Not one strike has been thrown. Chris Weidman goes for a leg kick, catches Uriah Hall's knee, and that leg just absolutely wraps around Uriah Hall's knee, and it looked disgusting.
I couldn't believe it because he was the aggressor going in, and then he steps, looks to put weight on it after he kind of comes back, and it's like,
could not do it. He knew what it was. I don't think he even wanted to look at it when it happened because he knew what happened. It was just an absolute agony and pain. Uriah Hall didn't want to win like that. And remember, Chris Weidman did this to Anderson Silva. This has only happened 3 times in the history of the sport, and 2 of them happened in the UFC. This happened way back in 2013. And I think the difference is, Chris Weidman talked about this all the time in his training. A lot of times you check kicks, you kind of put your foot down, you lift your knee, you kind of put your foot down to where your shin is kind of placed in a certain way. It still hurts when you get hit with it, but it kind of minimizes the damage. Mm-hmm. But Chris Weidman talked about how he used his knee in practice before to block kicks, and he mentioned it after the Anderson Silva. I'm not saying he was bragging about it, but in this particular case, you look at the replay. I don't know. I don't think Uriah Hall was doing it intentionally. He just happened to connect where his knee was, and that just leg just wrapped around. It was just unbelievable and just absolutely disgusting, man. He already had the surgery. He had it the following morning.
Right.
His wife already posted on Instagram that he'll be okay. He says he'll be back. I think for like mental satisfaction, he will be back, but we all know he won't be the same. Anderson Silva had to get back in the cage when it happened to him.
Right.
But he was never the same. He was never the same. And he happened at 33 years of age. I'm not saying he's old, but
when you think about it, you look through all the different examples of when it happened. Theismann did it. He was really never the same. And Alex Smith, though it was obviously a lot of infection and other things. And how many of these we've seen?
Yeah.
Now, Paul George is one. And I don't know that it
was nowhere near was near
his was never like a breakout.
It was
right?
a break.
It was
wasn't
a clean
a snap.
Break, yeah. right? And it didn't break through the skin. But yeah, I just don't. I hope he comes back and he's. But
I just hope he comes back and just starts walking, just like you mentioned
Smith.
Alex Smith infections.
Right. right. I mean, that's the thing because, and then here's the other thing. And I don't know if you evidently you said you didn't see this. A lot of people missed this.
What?
But we had another one this weekend in the Orlando Magic game. Nick, and I don't know if these are the kind of things you can stomach and you're okay with
well,
it or
tell
not.
Tell me about it. I mean,
so Devin Kennedy is the rookie guard for the Magic, and he's busted his ass, and he's come up, and he's actually become a decent contributor for the Magic, who's obviously trying to suck and like the Rockets are, but trying out a bunch of young players. He goes down, and I mean, when they tell you, when you saw, because you and UFC, there's no socks or anything either. But thank God, like I go back to the Sam Bowie injury. Thank God there was a sock and a calf sleeve,
so you can somewhat freak.
So it's not just like dangling there and the skin's open and everything else. But Mo Bamba was over him when he went down. Nick, when I tell you, Mo Bamba took his jersey off and put it over his leg so no one else had to see that it broke the skin, that's nasty.
Yeah. Props to Mo Bamba, to be honest with you. At least he recognized the situation. You got to be mentally strong. I mean, you're talking, look, when you see those, you could be the toughest guy in the world. When that thing happens in front of you, people, they get grossed out. Uriah Hall has, what, almost 28 fights, 27 bouts? The guy could barely stand in the ring after he saw that leg snap. I mean, Mo Bamba, I mean, I hate when I see that. And there's just been leg injuries left and right about this. We talked about the Alex Smith situation. We've mentioned Kevin Ware. I've seen that one live. I saw Chris Weidman live. I saw Anderson Silva live. Crute, who actually fought, his face, his leg didn't snap.
Yeah, someone mentioned that. Yeah.
But his knee was just giving out literally in the middle of the fight. The referee said, walk to me. He's like, yeah, I can do it. Takes one step. Knee gives out. I'm still doing it. He's like, nope, you're not fighting no more. Props to him for doing that, but golly. And some people are tougher than others. Like, I just don't see how you can bounce back from that.
You don't have the bone structure because it snapped, though, come on, man. Don't try and put that bad boy on the ground. That's just... Literally, Sam Bowie was a center out of Kentucky that the Blazers ended up taking instead of Michael Jordan, and he had a history of leg injuries.
Yep.
And he went down for the Blazers. And because he was wearing a calf sleeve, you know how you're on your back and you kind of pick your leg up, you bend your knee and you pick your leg up, like what just happened, like if you sprained your ankle?
Mm-hmm.
He did that, and the lower part of his lower shin, ankle, and foot was just dangling.
Oh.
It's just like we've seen so much of this in the last several years in multiple sports, and it never gets easier.
Are kids not drinking milk anymore? Like, what's the deal,
Arkansas
dude?
Milk. I don't know, man. It's
I don't know what the hell is going on, man. Like, it's
someone said, can they ban shin kicks? Well, you can't because that's like part of fighting, right?
You know what? I was talking to such a good point. I was talking to my friend about that, and he was kind of telling me you're wussifying the sport. There's certain kicks I would not mind being illegal. And I'm actually very interested in what AJ has to say about this.
Uh-huh.
But those front kicks where you're basically kicking the knee in the opposite direction that it's supposed to, we haven't seen a knee go backwards because of it yet. But wait for it, because I feel like those should be illegal, man. Those are disgusting. But the leg kicks, like... how are you going to make those illegal, man? Like,
that's an interesting conversation that you and AJ should have for the people, because you guys are the two resident UFC guys.
I would love to hear what AJ thinks. I don't think you can make the knee thing illegal. I mean, look, it's natural. You might go for a block. You might try to check a kick, and someone might catch your knee. You can't make that. But those front kicks, those little push kicks,
yeah.
Dude, I think those should be illegal. I think those are just outright nasty. Outright nasty. And then the last little thing about the UFC thing, and the reason why I bring this up, because this is actually an interesting tie-in with the Houston Rockets, because we talked about, remember when Laminack and I used to go back and forth about the Mandarin letters, right? Mm-hmm. Because the Houston Rockets were always
the city jersey
to the Chinese market, because they obviously had a massive, massive following, and they love the Houston Rockets. Well, you look at the Rose Namajunas situation, and she fought Zhang Weili, and she's from China. And they were asking Dana White the question, so what's next for Rose? He's like, well, you know, off the top of my head, you know, I'm thinking an immediate rematch for Rose Namajunas and Zhang Weili. Why do you think that? Because the Chinese following has been lucrative for the UFC. And all of a sudden, I'm of the belief that if you're a champion, even if you've defended it once, that you have to defend your title several times, or at least more than once, if you want to get an immediate rematch. Unless there's some sort of an exception, like a Conor McGregor, like you bring names or something like that. I can see an immediate rematch for the title for someone like that. You know what I mean? But for the most part, you don't deserve an immediate rematch. In this particular case, what are they doing? They're catering to the Chinese market, which makes sense. I'm not mad at that. That's why I'm for businesses. I'm not as critical towards promotions and businesses when they cater to their audience. It only makes sense. So that's probably the last UFC point that I have outside that disgusting leg break by Chris Weidman. Prayers to him and his family, and hopefully he gets better and starts walking around with very little infection.
Man, I'll tell you what, no doubt. You don't want to see anybody have a life-altering moment. I mean, obviously it's already putting your life, you're at danger every time you step into the octagon, but let's just make sure he can walk away from the sport regardless of what happens.
Yeah, he's already been a champion. He's defended his belt. He's defended the championship before. So, I don't know. At this point, I'd be like, you know what? Maybe just be a coach and train.
So, there you go. And by the way, because Largo and I and a couple people were going back and forth on some of the nastiest of those injuries. If you didn't see, and this is, again, because this is one you can relate to, Nick, because of our age difference. If you thought Sean Livingston was a good player as a backup point guard on the Warriors championship teams, go look at Sean Livingston's injury with the Clippers which caused him to be a career backup player. Ugh. Those things are nasty. All right, we're rolling through hour number two of the three-hour program. Lots more to get to, lots of different sports, lots of other stories. The Oscars last night, did you watch them? Did you care? Did you hear that there were a lot of people more than a little upset about the ending? That as well as a whole lot more coming up. It is the Press Box on ESPN.
Yeah, before we go to break, I got to tell you about this Ruiz Areola fight. I totally forgot about that. But Andy the Destroyer Ruiz Jr. will face Chris Areola, arguably the two best Mexican heavyweights in boxing history, squaring off in the Fox Sports PBC pay-per-view main event. This pay-per-view is an all-Mexican boxing extravaganza with all three pay-per-view undercard matchups featuring exciting pay-per-view undercard fights, two-hour prelims, and a two-hour prelim show on Fox, and it features Cuban star and super welterweight champion Arislandi Lara moving up to middleweight to face Thomas Lamana, headlining show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. The pay-per-view begins at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, and is priced at $49.99. Buy the pay-per-view now on foxsports.com/pay-per-view and watch on any screen. That's foxsports.com/pay-per-view.
Do you ever wonder what ESPN 97.5 hosts talk about during the breaks? Well, now we have your f***ing answer.
I don't know why you got to do it with the FM. All you got to do is say earmuffs.
Just go to twitch.tv/ESPN975 for exclusive uncensored content.
Can you earmuff it for me?
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
It's like riding a bike. You know, you get your footing right, and you know, you just get your rhythm going. And I think my teammates did a great job of looking for me all game. And I just wanted to, resort back to that work that I put in, just the shots that I take and practice and shoot around, try to get to those as much as possible to gain my rhythm. And I started to get a little bit more creative as the game, you know, started to progress. So it was a good start. Hopefully I build on this game and keep going.
Boy, if only Kevin Durant was just that jovial all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of burner accounts and saltiness and Michael Rapaport and all that other stuff. You missed it yesterday. Durant came off the bench and unloaded 33. They are the most gifted offensive team in the league.
No question.
It remains to be seen if they can play the defense necessary to win a title, but it's hard to argue that there's anybody that comes close to the offensive firepower of the Brooklyn Nets.
The efficiency is unreal. The guy is scoring at an unbelievable clip. He is taking the right shots. He's not taking too many to the point where he's missing too many. I mean, for someone who went through a serious injury like an Achilles injury,
yeah.
the guy doesn't seem like he's missed the beat, man. He doesn't. And maybe that goes to the fact that he's tall and the fact that he doesn't need as much mobile movement. I don't know. It's still tough to come back from that injury and produce the numbers that he's
producing.
Here's
what I would say to that, Nick. He has a gift that not many people have at his size. He's so efficient in the way his body moves anyway, because he's not exactly like muscular, right? But because he can shoot it a long way at his height, and the Rockets struggled with this for years, that you can't put a 6'5 PJ Tucker or an average small forward on him, because with his wingspan on top of his height, he's going to get his shot off against anybody, and he can keep stepping back and hit it. So it's not like he's a guy that's game is predicated on attacking the basket and taking contact and finishing at the rim. He finishes off the break. He can finish when he drives. But for the most part, he makes a living off of being an unbelievable sniper of a shooter from 35 feet and in.
Yeah, and that to me is amazing. I know a lot of people just see him like, well, he's just a tall basketball player that makes a shot over someone else who's just as tall. People don't realize how difficult that is. You know how hard it is to be a seven-footer or close to a seven-footer and shoot from that far out and make sure you have the right arc and the right spin to where you hit it, even when it's contested? That is ridiculously hard.
We were talking about this when we were talking about the kid Chet Holmgren coming out of Minneapolis that just signed with Gonzaga. It's one thing to be a seven-footer Because you're you're expected to be a guy that's a blue chip recruit and a five star because you can go down and put your butt on the post and you can score and you can rebound, you can block shots. But if you really truly want to take it to where the NBA has gone and be one of the elite kind of blue chip five stars going into the NBA draft, you've got to elevate your game and take it outside. We've seen Anthony Davis. We've seen Jokic. We've seen all these big men that in order to take it to that next level of elite status in the NBA, you've got to be able to face the basket. And if you're really going to take it to that ultimate high level, you've got to be able to make the three. And so you see more bigs trying to do it. There's a select few that can do it and doing it with the percentages and the consistency of a Kevin Durant.
And remember, Kevin Durant is a veteran. So when he started doing this, it wasn't like that. It was very common for big men like that to make three-pointers at that clip. Yeah, it was starting to get to that direction. It was already going towards that trend because the stretch four position and the fact that taller players are starting to take more three-pointers, and that was the direction the league was going in anyway. But even when he became a rookie, and even when he entered the league, it wasn't like there were just plenty of dudes like that that can shoot three-pointers. That guy is unbelievable. If he could have just, I would have never, ever, ever assumed that we would be talking about KD 6, 7, 8, 9 years into his career about how much of a diva he is and how he's kind of lost it in between his ears. No one would have said that. No one would have said that. So, and look, at the end of the day, he got a championship. If everything works out, he could win a championship with Brooklyn, where it's right. Kind of his team, even though James Harden is a massive star.
No, it's definitely KD's team.
His team.
I think it's funny, too, that Stephen A. Smith was telling the whole world a month and a half ago that Kyrie Irving should just quit the league. And Kyrie Irving just had too many issues going on, all these other things, and that he might want to step away, and maybe he wasn't the player. And now he's out there anointing him as one of the greatest players in the league. Look, Kyrie Irving's on a tear. And that's part of the reason why when you throw Joe Harris and you throw some of look, I remember this discussion I had with Charlie when Charlie said Blake Griffin was done. And I said, just give him the chance to fit in Brooklyn because I still think he'll dunk and I still think he can play. I thought he had a whole lot of I don't care in Detroit. He's playing pretty damn good quietly for that team.
Yes. And you can see the smiles. You can see his body language. You can see the way he's moving around the court. It's a completely different.
The only thing that stops Brooklyn in my mind is their lack of defense. Yeah. If the Lakers are truly healthy, the Clippers on an outside shot have a lot of talent, but I don't know that it's at the level of those two teams. I think what everybody wants to see is a Lakers-Nets final, and that would be interesting. But I think just strictly offensively, when you look at it and go across the board, okay, I can rattle off for you right now the top three best players on the Nets in any particular order of Harden, KD, Kyrie. If I ask you to name the top three scorers and the best players for the Lakers, I can give you the top two easily, and the third one becomes an open discussion. Is it Dennis Schroeder? Is it Kyle Kuzma? Is it, I don't know. You know, you have to look at it and go, it's not Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
I think it has to be Kuzma in the playoffs. Like, I think it needs to be Kuzma.
Is it Andre Drummond, their big pickup, because he helps them? Look, defensively, the Lakers can defend anybody. Offensively, I don't know that they're going to be able to hang with all Brooklyn brings to the table.
All right, last thing on Brooklyn. Speaking of Brooklyn, Kyrie Irving says he's going to observe Ramadan. Now, you worked with a man that did that quite some time, and Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, I don't know anything behind the scenes, but to my understanding, Hakeem Olajuwon actually honored that and didn't cheat.
To the utmost letter of the law, to where our equipment manager would say, Dream, we'll give you some, remember Quench Gum?
Yep, and he said no.
And he passed it down saying that would be cheating my religion and I won't do it.
By the way, if they stop making that Quench Gum, they need to go ahead and bring that back because I was a fan.
Yeah, but the flavor lasted for about 15 seconds.
Well, that's what they need to fix. That's what they need to fix.
Okay, if they do a new and improved Quench Gum, I'm in.
Totally in. Do you think the Nets advise against it, considering it's the playoffs and they're trying to win a championship? I actually don't think it's that big of a deal.
I don't think they can.
They can, of course. They cannot. They're not allowed to.
That's what I'd say, but they can't even. But, well, you can make suggestions, right? Yeah. I don't think it's in their best interest to
do that. I actually
don't
think it's going to affect you that much. I don't think it affects you that much. I really don't.
I'll tell you this. It's going to where it's
no
really,
water, no food. He can do it. He's young.
Day games is where it affects you.
100%.
Because you have to do it sun up to sun down. You can't have food or water.
Correct.
And so when we were with the Rockets, when Dream was fully practicing, I mean, he never stopped, but I'm just saying when he got into the Muslim religion and he really was passionate about Ramadan, they had it to a science. Like, depending on what city we were playing in, and right before sun up, they would make sure that he had a massive amount of food delivered to his room or wherever. And then they had it set up so even if it was during a portion of the game or if it was in pregame or whenever it was, the minute the sun went down and he approved that it's time, they had carbs and everything ready to go because – and I saw some of the greatest performances in Akeem Olajuwon's career happen during Ramadan when he had no food or water during the day and on a national TV game went absolutely nuts.
Yeah. And the food is – I know it sounds crazy, but to me the water is the struggle. Food ain't that bad. You'd be surprised. When you're
younger, think about how dehydrated you can get playing an NBA game and not putting anything back into your body from a hydration
standpoint.
That's
the struggle.
Yeah.
That's the struggle. But I think when you're young, it's easier, but it's still impressive to do that. And when you consider the high level that they're playing at, it is impressive. Although Hakeem Olajuwon really wasn't a beneficiary of load management. He was always playing. He was always playing minutes. So that might make a bit of a difference. But I thought that's interesting.
If Correa is now resting for baseball's version of load management, what kind of wussification of professional athletes have we seen? Where the NBA has load management. Baseball players who have, I think, 4 or 5 days off in the first month of the season look tired. They need some rest.
Yeah.
What, you can't just sleep all day on your day off?
Yeah.
I don't get it either. You're traveling charter when they used to travel commercial. And no, I'm not get off my lawn guy. If I buy a ticket to a game guy and I'm buying it to see the other team's best player and he sits out for load management, it's a bunch of BS. That would piss me off.
I'm with you. I am with you 100%.
So that's the first half of the program. We're going to take a break at halftime. We're going to come back for the second half. It has so much more involved. And you can be involved in it, too. If you want something off your chest that you've had on your mind, 713-780-3776. Get you in via call or text. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch and Twitter. We are the Press Box. This is ESPN.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Coming back with some Hova, some Jay-Z. One of my faves.
You say Chris Middleton looks like Jay-Z.
I can't hear a Jay-Z song now without thinking that his doppelganger is Chris Middleton of the Bucks.
Gotta look at it again. Because you said this so many times.
I have. If Chris Middleton had a tighter cut, I think he looks a lot like Jay-Z. And don't y'all come at me because
I'm totally gonna come at you
I've had plenty of really good calls.
I know
I just
why
always
you're...
see it. It's kind of his mouth and his teeth.
Mouth? Is it just his mouth?
What else?
I mean, why are
his
you
teeth?
Saying... No.
What?
You're saying his lips look like Jay-Z.
I'm
That's
not.
What you're saying.
I'm saying in terms of facial features, there's a resemblance.
Does Chris Middleton of the Milwaukee Bucks look anything like Jay-Z, chat? Let me know.
I think so. Jeez, why are you coming at me like that?
Because you do it to me all the time.
That's fine. By the way, speaking of hoops, Boogie has a Wonderland. The new Boogie Wonderland for the rest of the year. DeMarcus Cousins has been inked for the rest of the season by the Clippers. He found his forever home for this year.
I've been very pro Boogie Cousins. Obviously, he's humbled a little bit because he's not the same player. And being not the same player will absolutely make you humble. But he's older and he's more mature and he wants to be a part of a winning team. So good for him. I would have met. Did they go through both 10-day contracts? Can't they only sign two 10-day contracts and they have to either make the decision to sign them for the rest of the year or not, right? Or is it one 10-day contract?
You get two.
Two. Okay.
And I know that Paul George, after his first game where he had 7 points in about 9 minutes, Paul George was convinced they needed to, they just needed to lock him up, that he still had plenty left in the tank. But look, it worked out from his regard. He got out of Dodge on a really bad team in which every other game or so he showed up for the Rockets and played really significantly at times. But they wanted to obviously get young players more playing time, and they were trying to tank, and he was after more success and hopefully a longer contract. So he got it with the Clippers. Good for him.
Good for him.
I'm fine with that. One more quickly, just to wrap up news that's going on now. As you mentioned earlier in the program, but it is worth mentioning because of, and I think you said Charlie brought it up first, it's a great point, but the Colorado Rockies are looking for a general manager as Jeff Brittich, their GM, kind of abruptly stepped down Monday. They said it was a mutual agreement, but he was under a lot of fire. He was the guy that signed Nolan Arenado to the 8-year, $260 million deal in 2019 and then watched the team do less than stellar work on the field. They've been looking at him for a while and questioning some of his moves too. So right now the Rockies are looking for an interim general manager for the rest of the season before searching for a new general manager. Greg Fiesel, who was on Monday appointed as team president in addition to his role of being in charge of business operations, will oversee baseball temporarily. Jeff Luhnow would be really good in that role. And it's just like A.J. Hinch. Whatever happened, happened with the Astros. But that should not preclude him from getting another gig. And if the Rockies were smart, they'd at least interview Jeff Luhnow.
I think for him, it's up to him whether or not he even wants to go to Denver or not, or if he wants to work. Because he obviously has been paid handsomely. He doesn't need the money. He should only go back into this if he really wants to and he has a passion. He clearly has the resume. I don't know if Colorado is interested or if they're sold on promoting from within. But I would at least make the phone call. I don't know if Jeff Luhnow has to be the one to make the phone call. Maybe that the scandal kind of haunts him still. I doubt it. I think it's just like A.J. Hinch.
Yeah.
He should be able to get a gig anywhere and relatively quickly, and it's up to him. So I don't know if that's the move that he's going to make, but, yeah, I would definitely inquire.
But if you look at this guy's track record, the one thing that you could say is, well, okay, he, in a market like that, he may be overextended by giving Arenado 8 years and 260, but you compound that and make it worse – by trading him, which everybody goes, well, thank God we got that contract off our hands, until you realize as part of the deal where they didn't get a whole lot in return, they agree to pay St. Louis $51 million of the remaining balance on his contract. Why?
I don't get that either. I don't get these GMs and head coaches getting these massive buyouts. I don't know if it's because there's so much money in baseball and basketball, but there's like, even if you have so much money, do you want to just give it away just because you have so much of it? Like, I feel like that's not the mentality, but there's something in terms of leverage that forces these, you know, front offices to go ahead and pay the buyout, because it happens time and time and time and time again. So crazy, crazy stuff. There's actually two NBA things that I want to bring up to you, one of which that I forgot to bring up. The second thing goes back a few years and something you've brought up quite a bit. But let's go to the first thing. All right, I think we brought up a little – we mentioned the NBA referee news, but we didn't go in depth. But 10 NBA referees are signed light. They've been up to 24 referees in the NBA who have missed at least one game due to either contact tracing or COVID. All 10 of the referees that are not available right now should be ready and available for the playoffs, which is happening in less than a month. And they've also had 6 lower level G League referees brought up from the G League.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to ESPN.com, Joel, there's some team executives, general managers included, that are not happy that 6 of these G League refs have been elevated and promoted for the time being to promote in these NBA games because they felt like it's negatively impacted the games and results.
I would agree. Here's what I would tell you, Nick, right off the top before I even heard that last comment you made about what some of the GMs have said. I'd have those, you know, because they do the referee schedules, however they do it weekly or however with their travel and everything else. I would make changes accordingly. So those G League officials were only refereeing games between non-playoff teams, because you can't have teams in the heat and the thick of this playoff hunt going down the stretch, especially when if you're teetering between the 6 and the 7 spot or the 10 and the 11 spot, and you're either trying to get into the play-in tournament or trying to avoid the play-in tournament, and you got a G League official that suddenly decides whether he wants to be the hero and make a big call, or he just doesn't know, like, because some the veteran officials know when to and not to call a second technical. And they remember things like if a guy got one earlier in the game for something totally separate from a flagrant or whatever, so that they don't get ejected, so that the key players are on the floor and things like that. I can understand why the execs are upset, because this is the wrong time of the year to be putting G League officials in big games.
Well, here's the NBA rebuttal. It's not any G League referee that they're elevating and putting up to the NBA. It's their more senior, more experienced referees. And the other part of the rebuttal is it's not like they're just stuck to G League games. They have been including them in the rotation of NBA games.
That's fair.
So it's not like we're just getting random.
But to your point on the first rebuttal from the NBA, you can be the best player in minor league baseball that never sniffs a major league roster. So I don't care how good you were in the G League. There's obviously a reason why you aren't a full-time official in the NBA.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I would think the NBA would say as rebuttal is, I'm going to put these guys in the middle of the crews that have the most senior NBA officials to work with. Now I might be a little bit more open to that, because now they can either overrule if they have to and or kind of guide them through some of this. But it's still a risky proposition to have G League officials calling big-time games down the stretch for NBA teams. I wouldn't like it if I was a GM.
Well, I can understand that. I would imagine these GMs and team executives are showing footage. Look at this particular play call. Look at this play call. See, this is why I don't want him playing, or this is why I don't want him officiating this particular game. So I can imagine them doing that. The other thing, Joel, is these guys don't fly private. Officials fly commercial.
That's right.
So it's very dangerous as the playoffs are approaching, less than a month away. Referees have to continue to fly commercial, and now you run the risk of COVID and contact tracing, which becomes an issue for
the NBA. There's a good point, and then because the first question I had was, do they have similar protocol to the players? When they're traveling, is the NBA officiating department putting rules in place temporarily for these officials in terms of what they can and can't do? Look, I know everybody thinks it's the players and the lifestyle and what guys do when they're done with games or in their off time or at strip clubs or regular clubs or whatever. Let me just tell you something. The referees got game too, and they get out and they get after it, and they do their thing too. So you need to be, as we were talking about, you need to be hypersensitive right now, because you're getting to that time where last year, this is about the time everybody had to be put in a bubble. So as you
get
to the most—
Why don't they just do that for the refs?
So exactly, this is the most important time of the year. Unless you want to, and this would never go over with each team and their GMs, unless you want to, for the playoffs, put the officials on the team planes with the players, and that, like I said, that would never be approved, then you've got to do something for the officials, because you better make sure they're almost, aside from the two teams and the key players, which are the most important, those officials are so hyper important in the playoffs. And getting calls right, knowing the rules.
That wouldn't be approved, and they shouldn't. I mean, they could.
But they got to do something with these officials. Maybe they get them private planes for—
I'm okay with a referee bubble, like a bubble just for the referees.
I don't think that they would, though. Because you think about from start to finish with the playoffs.
Can't put them on the flights with the players, because they could build a relationship. Next thing you know, favorable calls, all that nonsense.
You get them private charter planes.
Just for the refs.
Yeah, but then the sticky situation is, I don't think NBA teams, as I've told you, there are certain guys that every team charts every official. And whether they're right or wrong, in some cases I'm here to tell you they're right, certain officials don't really care for certain teams and or guys and or coaches on those teams.
Okay.
In the playoffs, I don't think you can have the same crew like they do for baseball. They have the same umpiring crew for at least a 3 or 4 game series. And now they're taking the umpires with them. And sometimes that crew is with the Astros for multiple series in a row. In the NBA, you can't do that. Because if you have a guy like a Scott Foster that has an axe to grind with like he had with Chris Paul, and Scott Foster's assigned to your series, and you're going to say that he's going to be at every game in that series, that's a massive disadvantage.
100%. So that's an issue they may not have. They just might have to kind of roll the dice here.
Yeah.
Hope that the right referees do not test positive or have any issues with contact tracing, and hope they don't have to go back to the backups and reach down to the G League and get that, that. At this point, they just need to send a memo and an email to all the refs. Try not to go out too much. Try not to do this. We really need you for the playoffs. That's probably their only best bet, because they can't control where they're going right now. It's not the bubble anymore. So they probably need to do something like that. One more NBA note that I want to get your thoughts on, Joel, because this is something that you've brought up for quite some time before we get into the Deshaun Watson situation. I don't know how long you want to get into that, but I do want to talk a little bit about that and the NFL draft. But remember when Chris Paul's trade was vetoed by the
Hornets or New Orleans?
There's some audio I want you to hear that expands on that.
Okay.
That I don't think many of us have heard before. I don't know how old this particular audio is, but I want to say it's like 1, maybe 2 days old.
Oh, so it's pretty recent. Okay, yes. Sounds good. All right, we got that to look forward to. We've got lots of discussions that could still involve you. So with a little over an hour to go in the program, you can either call or text the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776, or you can hit us up on Twitch and Twitter as we're interactive throughout the program. It is the Press Box with Nick and Joel on ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on the box, we wrap up hour number two of the three-hour program and having a good time on a Monday with lots of good dialogue and you guys interjecting comments here and there as well. As we were talking in the last segment, a little NBA amongst other things, Nick was bringing some things at me, kind of throwing batting practice at me, and then me taking some swings. But, you know, I feel I'm so well-rounded now, and I can, and so well-versed to talk about all these other sports. But you know what? I still always love chopping it up on hoops. So whatever you got, Nick, I'm here for you. You wanted to throw something at me, so... throw me the audio. What do you got? Set it up for me.
Well, Ginny Buss was talking to Matt Barnes about the whole Chris Paul veto back in the day. Was this 2011 when they vetoed? It was about 6 or 7 years ago. We'll say it that.
So set it up that the New Orleans franchise was in limbo. They were for sale. So the commissioner at the time, David Stern, was the acting board of governors president for the New Orleans franchise. He would make any decisions or okay any decisions by the New Orleans franchise.
Well, this answer might expand on why David Stern did what he did. And maybe it gives some explanation as to, or maybe it fends off some of the hate and criticism that Stern got for deciding to ultimately veto that trade.
I can tell you exactly what happened. So, if you remember, we were in a lockout, right? When there's a lockout, there's a moratorium on everything. You can't make trades, you can't do anything. As we were making a deal with the union and then starting to lift the
lockout,
you know, the lockout rules, all the representatives of the teams had to be in New York for Board of Governors meeting to ratify the new CBA. And so as we're in this room, all of a sudden, there's kind of this rumor that goes in around the room about a trade. Well, at that time, the team was run by the league, right? So there's no way a trade could be happening if we're all in this room doing league business, except the general manager of the team felt that he had the authority to make a trade.
Of New Orleans at the time?
Right.
Okay.
And so felt that he could make a trade. And my dad, at that time, his health was declining. And he didn't make the trip to New York. I was representing the team. So I wasn't responsible for trades. Mm-hmm. So the trade was happening while everybody is in this room. So teams felt like, how is that possible? We didn't get a chance to make a trade for Chris Paul. And so they all attacked the league and said, this wasn't fair. We didn't all get a chance to you know.
But he wasn't going to you guys, so it doesn't matter. But go ahead.
I understand what they're saying.
It,
like David Stern didn't reject the trade as commissioner. He rejected the trade as governor of the New Orleans.
The Pelicans.
Pelicans. At the time, Hornets, I believe.
Correct. But that's the explanation. Is that the explanation that you would have understood? Because I felt like David Stern was getting unwarranted hate.
Unjustified
hate, I should say.
I mean, I think she's going to embellish a little bit on the side of the Lakers. I think at the same time, Dell Demps was the GM, I believe, at that time in New Orleans. And he did believe that he had the authority to make the move. I think that from a league perspective, what's accurate is that Stern got a bunch of immediate reaction and backlash from team representatives that said, whether it was a rumor that was accurate or not at the time, they just immediately reacted and said, if you okay this, if you let this go down, this could be the downfall of so many different team situations because this is going to create a super team. This is going to do this. This is going to do that. And maybe he felt pressure because most of the time, it's all about majority vote when you approve an ownership, a sale of a team.
Right.
So if he's the acting president of the team or whatever the title was when he was overseeing New Orleans, if he knew, just like the league has to give approval on trades, but if he knew that this trade could go down and completely alter the league for the next 5 years or more.
But the whole, right, but the whole thought process of you thinking that you're going to alter the whole league is because of super teams. Super teams already exist anyway. They already did exist.
They didn't exist back then.
I mean, they kind of did, right? Was Boston formed by that time?
Boston wasn't formed by this
time. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, like if that was the case, Chris Paul wasn't going to go to any of those other teams. Like it wasn't going to happen. So I felt like he succumbed to pressure because it sounds like the teams were trying to make it sound like they didn't get a fair shot at Chris Paul when in reality they knew they didn't have a real shot at Chris Paul and they just didn't want him to go to L.A.
But I think your comment first, Nick, is the most accurate, which is that he succumbed to the pressure. He knew that he was getting so much negative feedback from so many different teams that he couldn't allow this to happen because the league wasn't going to be in approval for it. They didn't want to do it. Now, I will say from a Rockets fan perspective, it's one of the greatest moments in the history of your franchise because you should be so grateful, and I tell people this all the time, and Daryl Morey, who takes credit for everything, Daryl Morey lucked out like you wouldn't believe that deal didn't go through because if that deal goes through, you never get James Harden. You are stuck with your franchise player for the next 5 years being Pau Gasol.
Yeah, and that would have not been good.
And the people that you would have had to surround him with were all the veterans were gone. You were trading Luis Scola. You were trading Kevin Martin. You were trading, I think, 3/5 of your starting lineup. And what you were getting in return as in being the third team in that deal, along with New Orleans and the Lakers, was Pau Gasol as your franchise player, who Daryl was enamored with. Thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah. Because honestly, yeah, the Rockets never won a championship. Yeah, they were a good regular season team. But had that happened, they might have been an okay regular season team with nowhere near the success they had with Chris Paul and James Harden and making it to the Western Conference Finals against the Golden State Warriors. I don't think any of that would happen. And look, Pau Gasol was good for his time, like when he was younger and healthier.
But at that time, he wasn't a franchise player to build around. He was a great side piece to a great player, as he proved with Kobe. But he wasn't a guy that was going to carry your franchise.
No question. There's no way he was going to be that. I guess we could talk a little bit a little NFL now. We talked a lot of basketball. We talked about your Houston Astros. It looks like the Atlanta Falcons are hearing trades on Julio Jones and also Deshaun Watson. A little bit of an update on that because it looks like the NFL is going to at least, if they haven't already, have begun their investigation because two plaintiffs in the Deshaun Watson case have agreed to speak with one of the NFL's attorneys via Zoom, according to Mark Berman. And I think this came out on Friday or Saturday. But we'll talk a little bit about that as well.
We'll start the third hour with that. And, Nick, here's what I mean when I've said this all these years, just to kind of back up the point that you and I have always discussed. The Chris Paul trade, this is how it was constructed, okay? Three teams, the Hornets, the Lakers, the Rockets, all right?
Okay.
The Lakers got Chris Paul. The Rockets got Pau Gasol. The Hornets got Lamar Odom, Kevin Martin, Luis Scola, Goran Dragic. The Pelicans weren't complaining. If I'm Dell Demps, I think I made a hell of a deal. If I'm the Lakers, I'm doing just fine. If I'm the Rockets, thank God almighty that trade didn't go down, because Daryl, as you were just getting started, you would have been the laughing stock of the league.
Yeah, and look, Dell, if it really was Dell Demps who was the general manager at that time, he would have done his job.
Yep.
You knew Chris Paul was going. Your goal, your whole job, your whole responsibility at that point is to what? To get enough in return, as much as you possibly can, even though we know in most cases, max players or star players, you won't get enough, the same in return. But at that point, he felt like, you know what? I did my job, because if they actually agreed to this deal.
Think about that. Dragic was in his prime then. The Rockets absolutely adored him. That's when they were going to try and re-sign him. And then the owner said, no, I want Jeremy Lin instead, when he was a free agent.
Yeah.
But you think about this. Dragic, at the peak of his career, would have been your point guard. Kevin Martin, who was above average as a shooting guard, would have been your two. Lamar Odom, who was still playing good basketball, would have been your small forward. Luis Scola would have been your power forward. New Orleans was a playoff team. If you're pressing the reset button, unlike what you got from the Anthony Davis deal and how that all thing went down when he forced that trade, or the Harden trade, when you don't get as much in return for a superstar, this is all you could ask for and more if you were New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, that's just crazy. I felt like it added a little bit. And obviously, sure, her being a part of the Lakers, she has her own bias and stuff like that. But I felt like it kind of defends David Stern. Is what I'm getting at. I don't know how much you believe that, but it kind of defends him a little bit, because I felt like he was getting unjustified hate. So
yeah, it's an interesting point. Yeah, it's funny that it took this long for any of these comments to come out. But for whatever the reason, Daryl Morey should be thanking his stars that trade didn't go down. All right, 2 hours in the books, 1 hour to go. We'll open up the third hour of the show, as Nick said, with some discussions and some of the latest on what's going on with Deshaun Watson's deal. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about new breaks, because I'm telling you guys, the days are over where you have to go to a brake shop to get your brakes worked on. And you have to sit in the bad waiting room and drink cold coffee and watch bad television on uncomfortable furniture around people you don't even know. Well, those days are over. It's just like how grocery store shopping has evolved to where now you don't have to go to the store anymore. You can either do curbside pickup, or you can have them deliver it to you. You can do the same thing with your brakes now. They come to you. You want them to come to your job? They'll do it there. You want them to come to your driveway or your garage? They'll do it at the house. You could be doing whatever you want to do. You could be watching a ball game, drinking a beer. You could be cutting the lawn. You could be doing whatever you need to be doing multitasking, other than doing your brakes, while they do it for you. They're technicians, they're experts, and all they do is brakes. They're not going to try and upsell you on all the other things you need done to your car. And by the way, their prices are competitive with brake shops across the city. And the work they do is phenomenal. And they do it all at your convenience, wherever you are, not whenever you can get to a brake shop and wait in line. Check them out today, nubrakes.com. nubrakes.com, you mentioned ESPN 97.5, save 10% right off the top. But why would you do it any other way and go to a brake shop when you can have them come to you and do the great job that you need them to do? Check them out today. It's nubrakes.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.